Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-host, Ms. Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So tonight, I would like to say welcome to everyone. Misty, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you tonight, Bonnie?
I'm doing great, and I'm glad to be back from my vacation and back
vacation.
Yeah, getting back in the swing of things again. And tonight we have a very special guest with us that I know a number of our members were waiting for, and you received information about it in the newsletter today, and I sent out some advance information to some people who I knew would be interested. And she's a very incredible woman. Her name is Carolyn Pearson. Carolyn, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Bonnie. It's a wonderful thing to be here with you.
Yes, and in fact, you know, I will mention to you what I did write in the newsletter because I didn't have a chance to, you know, send it to you yet. But it really was amazing how I actually found you again. And I was just, like, really intimidated, so I was afraid to ask you to come on the show, but okay. But I wrote this. It says, Carolyn Pearson on Straight Wives Talk Show tonight. It says, in 1986, I had the honor to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show in its earlier days. I was on a panel of women who were married to gay men. Since I was running a support group here in Philadelphia and breaking new ground, I was asked to be a guest. There were five of us on the panel. That I remember. But the one person I remember so well was a beautiful inside-and-out woman named Carolyn Pearson. Carolyn had written a book about her marriage to a gay man called Goodbye, I Love You. Those were in the days before computers were on hand to give us instant information on the subject, so I was so excited to meet her and hear her story. Since this was over 25 years ago, I remember little else except the beautiful copy of her book she honored me with in her inscription to a sister in pain.
Mm.
Her story and those words inspired me for many years to come. And it said I was able to track Carolyn down and took a chance on asking her to appear on my radio show tonight. And she was very kind in saying, yet, and here's a bit of information about her. And I talked about the information that you sent me. And then I said, on Carolyn's site is a beautiful video that has been made targeting the Mormon community. I think many of our own women from every community will find this video moving and helpful. And I gave them the link and, you know, how to get to the show for tonight.
Mm.
And that's why I said I was so excited to be able to actually get you to come on here.
Well, thank you for all those good words, Bonnie. Thank you very much. Wow, that was a long time ago, wasn't it?
It was a long time ago, and it was in a very hard time long ago. And I would like to talk to you about that for a moment, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because I think a lot of people who are part of my network now, there's over 7,000 women at this time.
Oh, golly.
Who receive my newsletter and who listen to the radio show.
Whoa.
Yes, but they're coming and going. You know, I'm here for them on their road ahead. And then when they get ahead, you know, they move on, hopefully. But back in the days when, you know, you and I were on that show, there was not hardly any information out there about women in this situation. And this is a time when AIDS was just rolling through, you know, in its worst possible way. And, of course, you know, with your husband, with the loss of him, you know, people weren't talking about it. And you were so brave, and you were really the pioneer to come out and tell this story. But I think that you lived through that time and I lived through that time, and people just don't realize how dark and how ugly those days were when people just didn't understand anything about AIDS and, you know, people who contracted it. If you were in any way related to them, they were afraid to be around you. I don't know if you ran into that problem.
I didn't as much as some people that I spoke to. In fact, I really don't recall that that was part of my experience at all, of people having people shun me. There may have been some of that that I wasn't aware of, but in general, I didn't find that.
Uh-huh.
But of course, you're right, that was a time of huge darkness and ignorance nationally. And of course, here I was in this kind of small pocket of Mormondom that was maybe ground zero for darkness and ignorance on this subject. And my former husband and I never even discussed the possibility that I would write anything about our story. It was just too shameful. But if there is anything to fate or fortune, or that we have a plan that we came into this life with, or that we have any kind of guidance or anything. And my husband said to me several times, he said, I'm so sorry that this is so hard for you. But he said, I know that I think that you and I contracted to do this hard project. And it's a very hard project. And I'm sorry that it's so painful, but I think we're here for a purpose. And as I said, we never even discussed that I would write our story. But he's the one that set me up as a professional writer. And surprisingly, my first success with writing was a self-published book of poems that he said, we have to publish these.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, who was going to be first in line to publish somebody's poetry? But he said, well, then I can become a publisher. So, of course, you know, you just need money to do that. But we put out this little book called Beginnings that surprisingly really put me on the map locally and then somewhat beyond locally. And that set me up to do everything I was able to do in the future, and certainly set me up to do this very important work that turned into Goodbye, I Love You, and subsequent things that I've written to help develop better understanding toward our gay brothers and sisters. So
can you talk
I
a little bit
back
about your marriage also, you know, how you met your husband and when you found out?
Sure. I can tell that little story if you want.
Yes, I'd like to hear that.
This was in the 60s, and we were very much in the 60s, and we were very much in Provo, Utah. And we had both been students at Brigham Young University. He had gone on a Mormon mission to Australia, and mm-hmm. I had got my master's there at the university, and I was a couple of years older than he was, but we met in a theater production there, Thornton Wilder's The Skin of Our Teeth, and I just fell for him. And he fell for me as much as he was possibly able.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you all understand my putting it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because our men do love us as much as they can.
Exactly.
And so anyway, we were good friends, and then it escalated, and we got engaged, and I was just thrilled. And about a month or so after the engagement, he broke it off. Before that, a major thing happened before he broke the engagement off. He came to me one day, and he had been fasting for a couple of days and said, I have something important we have to talk about. And so he told me that in his background there had been homosexual desires and some experience, but he said, that's not who I am. I don't want that life. I want you. I love you. I want to have a family. I want to do life the way the church tells us, that the way that I know is the right way to do it. And I can, and I want to. And I was he and I were both very naive about the complexities of all this. And we both just accepted what we had been taught, that this sort of thing is just kind of straying off the right path, and you just repent. That's all. You just repent, and you
exactly.
get back on the right path. And so I didn't find myself as alarmed at that conversation as I would hope that a woman would be today.
Mm-hmm.
And so we continued our engagement, and then about a month after that, he got really terrified of everything, and he broke it off. And I was just really devastated. And then some months passed, and he came back, and he said, I was just frightened, and I need you so badly, and I love you, and I do want to marry you. And I felt good about proceeding. And so on September 9th, you see, I just passed my 46th wedding anniversary. And in 4 years, I think I might throw myself a golden wedding anniversary. Do you think
mm-hmm.
I should?
Mm-hmm.
So in September of 66 we married. And there were plenty of ways in which we had a very good marriage. And unlike some gay men that I have spoken to, it was not repulsive for Gerald to have sex with me. And to some extent, it was a good experience for him. But and much later on, I had a visit with one of the three original researchers of the Kinsey Reports, Dr. Wardell Pomeroy. This was just as we were making a decision to divorce or not. And he said to me, I think that your husband has got to be a 4 on this Kinsey scale, you know, of 1 to 6. It's possible that he could have relations with a woman, but his primary need will always be for a man. So that was the way that he experienced his relationship to me. And soon after our marriage, he learned that what he'd hoped for had not happened, that he had not changed in his primary feelings. But he was in it, and he had his hand at the plow, and he was not going to go back, and he wanted to maintain. And then we had children. We had three children before our problem really erupted in our face, and then a fourth child, as we were trying to figure out how to maintain the marriage once we both understood that this had not gone away. And so to shorten some of this, after 2 years of anguish still in Utah and then moving out of the state and 2 years here in the Bay Area of California, we determined to end the marriage and remain good friends. And ending the marriage was the only way we could manage to maintain a friendship. And it was very puzzling to our children because they had not seen us fight. And so we divorced, and 6 years later in 84, Gerald passed away from AIDS. And that was in my home here in Walnut Creek, California, at the very where I was taking care of him at the very end of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the summary of our story, and it had never occurred to me that I would write this. But soon after, well, as we were building up to the time of his death, I was very much aware of the national scene and the scene in San Francisco and all of the awful stories of these so many, many young men who had been abandoned by their families, who were dying alone in the streets. And it was a very difficult thing to be aware of.
It was very painful because even back then, you know, the medical field would not even treat many of, you know, the people who were suffering so badly.
It was really...
You know, they were so afraid that they would, you know, people didn't understand how AIDS, right?
It was a great mystery, and nobody quite knew what was going on. And there was tremendous fear around it. So anyway, within a few weeks after his death, it occurred to me, what if I wrote something about our story and what we learned and try to humanize all of this, especially for my community? And I had become quite a well-known figure in Mormondom.
Uh-huh.
And I had written a lot of things that had put me on the map, very safe kinds of things, though I had also forayed into my feminist side. But I had a very strong following, and the leadership of the Mormon Church was aware of me and even quoted me at General Conference and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So I knew that I could do something important for my community and perhaps for others if I was able to write this. So again, to shorten all this, when I got the permission of the important people, and that was essentially Gerald's parents, and that was kind of a story in itself, but soon they, after being very hurt that I would even suggest such a thing, they came back to me and said, we think you should do it, and because we want people to know that we didn't ever turn away our son. And of course, our children were fairly young still, but I did let them know what I was planning, and they knew that it was something their father would want, and so they also gave me permission that we would have our family make this public. So anyway, I did, and everything happened very rapidly, and I was able to get an agent who very quickly sold just this little synopsis of my story to Random House. And prior to that, I had sent out a few little inquiries to some of the women's magazines, and I got overnight letters. This is very unusual. I mean, writers don't get this, but I got overnight letters from both Women's Day, from Red Book and Ladies Home Journal, who both wanted this story. And anyway, it quickly went into full book form with Random House, and they sent me on a 8-city tour, which is where I met you, and it was the book had a lot of publicity, and it really exploded the conversation in my own community in Mormondom, and it is really looked on as kind of a watershed moment.
Was it very controversial when it first came out?
Well, you know, I was expecting that it might be, and I was prepared for anything. I believe with Anne Frank that people are really good at heart. And and I felt that while I knew that there would be some controversy, I felt that the largest response would be a positive one. And that's certainly what I experienced. I remember when my editor at Random House called and said, Deseret Book, this is the major Mormon publishing company in Utah, has asked for an advance copy of this book. I thought, I can't do it. What am I going to do? What's going to happen to me? And then a couple of weeks later, she called and said that Deseret Book was ordering 1,000 copies of the book, and that they wanted me to do an autograph session during what they call general conference. So as I began to receive the hundreds and hundreds of letters that came in, I started to kind of categorize them of Mormon gay or non-Mormon lesbian or parent of gay child or whatever. And I found that the largest file that I was collecting was just a general LDS of people in Mormondom who did not have a gay child or were not gay themselves or married to one, but just wanted to say thank you so much for helping me understand something that I have never been able to understand. So
Carolyn,
that really opened the door in a lot of ways.
I was wondering if you could just explain to our listening audience, because I hate to feign ignorance with this too, many of us don't really understand, you know, Mormonism.
Yeah.
And the Latter-day Saints, is that the same religion?
Yes, it is. It is. The official name of the church is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And there was an early nickname that was given from the Book of Mormon. These people were called Mormons, and that name stuck. But it is synonymous.
And can you tell me about how many people are in the country who are Mormons?
Country, I guess I'm not sure, but I believe that there's about 10 million who are on the worldwide rolls. Not all of those would be active, but it's a fairly significant minority.
I think that people have a lot of conceptions and misconceptions about, you know, Mormons, and not understanding multiple marriages.
No, well, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's very, very challenging to figure out what in the world is going on here. And I personally have a very interesting history with my church. I am still active in the church. I am known widely as a renegade. I am out of all of my closets. I'm out of my feminist closet. I'm out of my gay rights supporting closet. And as a surprise to many, many people, I am deeply loved in my congregation and in the larger church.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are people who think I'm a little dangerous as a radical, but it's been kind of remarkable that I've been able to maintain a very respected position.
It is kind of remarkable, in as much as that what you promote is something that's against the mainstream, probably, with any kind of religion.
It, you know, like society in general, many churches and the Mormon Church are slowly making steps forward in consciousness about issues around homosexuality. And the official position of the Mormon Church is still, well, it's changed somewhat over the years in that some of the really outrageous language and very misleading assessments that used to come from church headquarters that that essentially just described it as a perversion and an abomination. Understand now, and see, Mormons are very big on science. So the scientific facts about homosexuality that have come forward have made a large imprint on Mormon thinking from the top to the bottom.
As far as it not being a choice?
And the official language that you will hear spoken does not just say that, that this is just an evil choice. The official position really is right now is more like we don't know where this comes from, and we are not blaming the homosexual the person. Well, same sex attraction is the preferred term, and we do not blame your parents. It's nobody's fault, but this is just perhaps your cross to bear that you have to live with. And it used to be kind of standard, the idea that if you marry, this will just go away. And there would be some people who would still promote that. But in general, that is not, and that's certainly not the official position today. And
that's really interesting. I was just curious with the Mormons. I know that, you know, different religions have, like, for instance, I'm Jewish. And with Jewish people, there's, like, different denominations of being Reform or Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox, conservative. Is it the same way with the Mormons?
No. Mormons are pretty much monolithic in terms of the way all of the what are called wards, which is the congregation, within the larger unit called a stake. There's a highly correlated program that is the same everywhere in the world. Now, within that monolithic structure and very clear centralized teaching, there's a fairly wide variety of what you might call highly conservative Mormons or liberal Mormons. So that's
the
best
the
you can
group.
Hope for here is to be on the liberal end of Mormondom to talk about these issues. So even, I don't know, a lot of conservative Mormons that I know of on this issue are really opening up considerably.
And how about the gay Mormon community? Is there a gay Mormon community that's more active now?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, in Utah, there's a very large population of gay people. In fact, to our astonishment, I think a year or so ago, one of the big magazines counted Salt Lake City as like one of the top three or four gay capitals of the nation in terms of activity and being gay-friendly and all of that. And there's a lot of there's support groups for LDS Mormons, those who are wanting somehow to stay in the church, those who have left. There's a group called Affirmation that can be found online. Family Fellowship can be found online. At the back of my second book on this subject called No More Goodbyes, which I self-published a few years ago, I have kind of I have a list of resources of organizations that would be helpful, and of course groups like PFLAG that are general ones, but also some specifically Mormon organizations.
Uh huh. And I think that's so important to have the resources.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's so amazing that the work that you've done, I mean, and now it's been, you know, for a while, you know, 25, 30 years, you know, since all of this
happened. Yeah, I know. And I do feel that I've been called to do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a passion and a mission for you.
Absolutely.
And you've made such a difference.
Right. Another important thing that I did was a stage play that premiered in Salt Lake City in 08 called Facing East, the story of a Mormon couple dealing with the suicide of their gay son.
Yeah, so could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I have a master's degree in theater from BYU, and theater is a major love of mine. And I've written some plays, along with a lot of my writing career has been very eclectic. And if anybody wants to, you probably have given them my websites. Just
CL Pearson. Yes, I did. Announce it again for them.
But you could get in there and browse some of the things that I've done. But in about 6 or 7 years ago, I thought, you know, it's been quite some time since I wrote anything on this subject, and I always thought that Goodbye, I Love You was, you know, my one and only big contribution. Though since then I had been very available and heard from hundreds and hundreds of people and did a lot of speaking, but it occurred to me, well, two things occurred to me at the same time. One, that I wanted to write something important as a theater piece, and what in the world could be more of a dramatic situation than the suicide of a dearly loved Mormon gay young man. And so I began to develop that idea and created a play that takes place entirely at the graveside after the funeral, that the two parents are there, and we get the story through their recollections, and then for the first time they meet the lover or the partner of their son that they had chosen not to meet. He shows up unexpectedly at the grave. And it's a very, very dramatic situation. This play, along with my other things, are available on my website. After it had a very successful run in Salt Lake City, and the church's newspaper called the Deseret News gave it the top drama pick of the year, tied with Hamlet at the Shakespeare Festival in southern Utah.
That's quite an honor.
So it was a very successful piece. And then we had a limited off-Broadway run with the same cast and then a San Francisco run. And it's since been done at least a dozen community theaters and universities. I felt really drawn to write that story, as well as the book No More Goodbyes, subtitled Circling the Wagons Around Our Gay Loved Ones, that showed the terrible goodbyes we continue to say. And the two-thirds of it are good stories, especially of Mormon families not letting anything come between them and their gay kids.
I think that's an important lesson, because I know with a lot of other religions, you know, when you get fundamentalists who are overzealous and religious, you know, they just cut off children and shun them and make them feel very unwelcomed.
Totally. And that has absolutely happened in Mormondom and continues to, but less and less.
Now, did that happen with the parents of the young man who committed suicide? Was that something that they were both looking into, of how they related to, did they know their son was gay?
In the play that I wrote?
Yes.
Oh, yes. And, of course, this play that I wrote is fiction that is informed by the many, 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 many stories that have come to me, and especially the suicide attempt of a man who became a close friend of mine, who told me about his suicide attempt, and he was in a coma for 2 weeks, and then he survived. But in the play, yes, the parents do know that their son is gay, but they also know that it's absolutely, totally wrong and that in the sight of God it can never be condoned, and in the sight of the church it never. And he's in the story, he's excommunicated from the church, and mm-hmm. And the tension in the family is just unbearable. And in the play, I have the father be the one who is the more understanding, and the mother is the one who is less flexible.
Mm-hmm.
In real life, it might be just the opposite, but I wanted to do it this way in my play. So yes, they do know, and they go have gone through hell with it, and then they have to go through hell again, wondering, what did we do that contributed to his suicide?
I think that was somewhat similar to the movie Prayers for Bobby.
Yes.
You're familiar with that, where the
yes,
mother...
Yes, I am. I am. And I have... I met Bobby's mother. She lives here in Walnut Creek, where I live.
Oh, how about
and,
that?
And in No More Goodbyes, while it is written specifically from Mormon territory, I do bring in a few kind of guest stories from other religions. And I had been aware for years of her story of how she confronted her Presbyterian religion,
uh-huh.
and the tremendous national work that she did. So I called and asked if I could come visit her, which I did, and I wrote that into one of the stories in No More Goodbyes.
Yeah, I just like to be open on this particular subject. I have tremendous compassion for gay people who go through the struggles that religion puts them through.
Absolutely.
And I really understand, how torn and conflicted they are. And I have some of these wonderful gay men who join my support network because they are totally suffering, and more importantly, they know that they're hurting their wives so much. And, I'm a great advocate for everybody to come out and have equal rights. I don't know if you're aware of this, my daughter was a lesbian. And, I was very, even though she passed away when she was 22 years old,
mm-hmm.
I was very happy that I was able to at least help her with her acceptance of herself, because I never wanted her to be in a position like her father, who couldn't accept himself. And, I really do believe that gay is predisposed genetically. I have rarely ever not
right.
seen it within a family somewhere. And I believe it is, genetically... genetic markings, and every gay person I meet, there's some gay somewhere in the family. And,
right.
People always talk about choice. I was just curious if you could tell me this with the Mormons. A lot of Christians now are coming out and saying, well, okay, maybe people are born gay. However, knowing that, they don't have to act on it.
Right, yes, that's the official position of the Mormon Church, exactly.
Oh, okay. That hasn't changed?
No, officially that has not changed.
Uh-huh.
Now, you see, there's enough tension going on down here at the bottom where people live. And I know that there are many bishops, that's the head of the congregation, and stake presidents, who is a position just above that,
uh-huh.
who are deeply concerned and are working with the gay people in their congregations and are unwilling to excommunicate them and are trying to be a part of the force of
mm-hmm.
finding a new way to embrace these people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you see, the thing is that right now we are acting out history. And I think if we could rise up above the landscape and look down on it, we would have a tremendous appreciation for the work that we are doing and for the fact that we are confronting, and all of the women and the men that are listening here in their own lives, they have, in some way, like it or not, been called to be on this frontier.
Uh-huh.
And we are addressing a very important social issue. And if we could see it clearly, I think we could look back and say, wow, look what we were doing, something as important in its time as certainly as giving the vote to women way back then, and then deciding that women had souls after all, and wow, of the people who struggled so much to put an end to the slave trade.
Uh-huh.
In our own way, we're addressing the issue of the day.
Well, I think that, you know, it's so hard when you go up against any church, and I know that people are doing it all the time now, but, you know, little inroads are made because at least people now, I know it may sound like a minor progression, but at least the church at this point is acknowledging that you could be born gay as opposed to it being a choice.
Right, right.
You know, that when,
and,
until
and,
recent years, I think it was always stated that it was a choice. And like
right.
you said, if you would get married to someone, those feelings would go away. They would subside. And I would say about 20% of gay men are able to perform heterosexual sex, at least for a while, you know,
yeah.
while they're in their 20s or maybe even 30s, because, you know, they still have testosterone that's moving along and anything can feel okay. And some of them do it. You know, men have told me all different ways of fantasizing that they pull it off because they want to be a good husband.
Right.
But, you know, the point remains it can only go on for so long.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, people make the effort and they try because of all the pressure that's been brought to bear and being told that, well, if you really try to be a good husband, those feelings will, you know, eventually go away, but they don't.
Right.
And they can't.
And right. And I've had men tell me that, you know, and especially men who were celibate and chaste prior to their marriage, that once they married and began to have sexual experience at all, that exacerbated the problem. It didn't make it any better at all. It made the problem worse because
that's
they had
really
opened they had opened that sex door, but
mm-hmm.
it somehow became clear to them they'd opened the wrong one. And everything came crashing down on them like never before.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good point. You know, I think that with a lot of women who have never had sexual experience, a lot of times they don't have the opportunity to really understand what to expect as far as sex is concerned.
Yeah.
And I would assume that's, you know, really predominant in the Mormon
sure.
teachings. Is that correct?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
So,
very much.
You know, I think that's where people run into a problem, and I, you know, certainly never try to change anybody's beliefs. But I think, you know, misconceptions of sexuality have really made things so much tougher for people. You know, between the guilt that, you know, people live with, about the guilt that gay people, again, gay men live with on trying to be straight, between women not having any sexual experience to draw from,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they really can't tell what's good and what's bad or what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
And a lot of times our women just always internalize this blame because their husbands are telling them that there's something wrong with them because they can't, you know, take the responsibility to be honest about it.
Right. And the husband doesn't even have to say there's something wrong with you. That we are taught as women from day one that everything is up to us anyway. And
mm-hmm.
and that it's our fault if something is not going right on a relationship level.
Mm-hmm.
So of course it's a huge thing for a woman to experience that kind of rejection.
Now within the church, I'm just curious: was there ever a point where women were blamed if their husbands weren't straight? That they were in, you know, some cultures do that. They say, well, you know, if your husband's gay, then you're not doing something right.
I don't think you would find very much of that feeling. There are a few cases that I know a couple that I remember from way back when we were going through the hardest, well, before we married, really. And he and his fiancée, and because he had had some experience that he had to repent from, he had to be interviewed by some of the top authorities in Salt Lake. And that particular authority said to her in the interview, if you will be sufficiently feminine and sufficiently righteous, you can save this man.
Uh-huh.
Now, it didn't work out that way. She was not sufficiently feminine or sufficiently righteous to save him, because he collapsed, as most gay men do, in the marriage. And but what a terrible thing to put on a woman.
Exactly.
But I wouldn't say that that would be the general thing that people would blame the woman if the man can't quite maintain in a marriage.
Yeah, but that's okay. The woman blames herself anyway.
Yeah.
You know, this just adds more to it.
Sure.
So do you think there, you know, just your, you know, personal opinion, with this becoming a more and more open issue and people learning more and more about it, and gay people coming to them, you know, terms with themselves, you know, in an easier way. Still
in
not
my
good,
community?
Though. No, in any community. But,
oh,
okay, let's talk specifically in your community. Do you think
I would say, I have to say yes in my community, and I think yes in general in society. There's no question. I mean, the big TV show that's coming up that's getting all of the buzz, the new normal, or what's it called, these two gay men who are having a straight woman carry their baby for them. That's...
Uh-huh.
There are and that darling boy on Glee. There's so many things in our popular culture that are the bellwether for where our thinking is going. And
I agree that I think it's wonderful that it's going in this direction.
Sure.
But I don't necessarily. I'm not quite sure yet on which side of the fence I stand on this, whether it's going to really change in the long run until religion really changes.
Well, because I think that eventually it's inevitable.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, unless civilization has some absolute breakdown, and right now I am belatedly reading 1984.
Yeah, so you know it's coming up, right?
I guess there's a possibility that any weird thing could happen. But in general, I think civilization is on an upward march in terms of higher consciousness and more education and more learning and more compassion and drawing the circle of understanding and of acceptance wider and wider and wider.
Uh-huh.
We take two steps forward and one back, but we always take another step forward, even after some of our more stupid stumbles. So in my right mind, in my believing mind, where I'm in about 95% of the time, where I think humanity is good and is being guided somehow in our own inner wisdom and consciousness, and hopefully by whatever spiritual support might be available anywhere, I believe that we're moving forward. And, of course, to continue to understand and accept our gay brothers and sisters is part of that, to me, inevitable progress.
Now, I was wondering, when your marriage split up, how old were your children? Were they in their teens, or
no. At that time, the oldest one was 10, and the youngest one was 2.
And at what point did they know their father was gay? In other words, when did you tell them?
About 4 years after that, and they just kind of surmised it after a while. Gerald and I had an agreement that, and actually the Kinsey researcher counselor that I spoke of, Wardell Pomeroy is his name,
uh-huh.
He agreed with me that these children were too young to have to be thinking about any of this. And so Gerald and I agreed that we would answer their questions honestly, but only when they asked.
Uh-huh.
But about at least 4 years after the divorce, except for, I think, the smallest one, they all kind of had their own idea, oh, yeah, Dad is gay, you know, whatever that meant to them.
Uh-huh. Yes, because, you know, my thinking's really changed over the years in that particular area. where I used to really believe that, you know, if you can hold off, they shouldn't have to know. But now, 30 years later and tens of thousands of people later, I realize that my point of view has really changed it. Kids know more than you think they know, especially today.
Yeah.
Technology. A lot of our kids find out before the mothers find out.
Yeah.
And they have to become the holder of the secret because they don't want to break up
the
marriage.
That's a hard thing, yeah.
Very hard. Or they tell their fathers, and their fathers swear them to secrecy, and if you tell your mom, you're going to ruin the marriage. You know, there's all kinds of different kinds of forms of manipulation that are going on.
Yeah.
I just feel that so many, I have letters from many children who feel their lives are destroyed as far as trust in their relationship, about their own future relationships, about feeling guilty all the time. So I really do believe that, you know, the truth will set you free in some way. I don't think you have to know any details about somebody's
mm-hmm.
sexual life.
Yeah.
But just that people are different. You know, they're born differently, and they were hoping things would be different, but they
right.
aren't. You know, but how do you feel about that?
Oh, yes, I agree with you. And it's certainly unfair to cause any kind of a wedge in a family by people not being given important information. I think rather than saving all this for some terribly shocking thing when a child is 20 years old or something. I mean, and it would be harder, I think, to even do that because
uh-huh.
everything is so much more open.
And
so
then the children always feel like, can they trust their mother? She knew this information and kept it from them. I mean, there's
yeah.
so many complicated issues that come into bearing when you have children. And, you know, I don't know what's the right answer and the wrong answer. I just feel that secrets destroy families.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that kind of sums it up for me.
Yeah, in general, I would agree with that, yeah.
And then I know a lot of our women have difficulty with the fact that their husbands don't want them to tell anybody, including their families. Do you run into that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that puts so much pressure on, you know, the wives that, you know, they don't,
right.
they want to talk to their families and their husbands are telling them, no, you can't tell them this secret.
Right. And in a kind of closed community, well, maybe I shouldn't use that word closed, but in a close community like
uh-huh.
a Mormon ward, when parents receive the information that they have a gay child, sometimes, though they themselves might be quite willing to respond positively and work to maintain the good relationships, very often they kind of find themselves going into the closet of not feeling that they want to or can, or they're just not comfortable telling even some of their close friends in their church group about this. But that's less and less now. But still, it's hard. About a month ago, I was asked to officiate at the commitment ceremony of these two beautiful, I had never even met them, but they contacted me and said, is there any way we could get you to come to Utah and preside at our commitment ceremony?
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, if you want to give me a plane ticket, I'll come in. So I did. And
uh-huh.
Here were these two 26-year-old, very sharp, very beautiful young women. And I was able to speak to the Mormon parents of both of these girls, and especially one of the brides. I spoke at length to her parents, and they were both very really trying so hard to do everything right in terms of supporting her. And in fact, the father, one of his professional jobs was he was a jewelry designer, and he showed
mm-hmm.
me the two rings that he had designed for these two brides, and they were just stunningly gorgeous. But the mother was the one who especially said, you know, I think in the family we're doing pretty well with this, but she said, I can't talk about it to my friends in the church yet. I just can't. So there
yeah.
is that.
I think it's going to take time. you know,
yeah.
like you said, as, you know, as you move ahead.
It will. And I
younger
said to
people
her,
are coming in and they're
yeah,
more accepting.
Right. But I said, listen, like it or not, you have been called to be a participant on this social frontier. And I want to challenge you that in the next short while you will do something that's a little bit braver than you thought you could do, of having a conversation with someone and not being ashamed to tell them what's going on with your family. Because that's the only way it's going to happen.
Exactly. And I think that's such beautiful advice. You know, Carolyn, when you first started off with writing, long before all of this came about, as you mentioned with, you know, your husband, you were a poet.
Yeah.
And you wrote a beautiful book of poetry. Would you be able to share maybe one or two poems with us this evening?
Oh, sure I could. I could probably go on much longer than you wanted to.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Here's a tiny, tiny poem that I wrote in the, well, the first place this appeared was in Goodbye, I Love You.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a compilation of poems now. And in fact, when I have gone to speak at elementary school classes that my grandkids were in, I made them learn this particular poem and say it out loud with me, saying, you know what, you're going to find some times in your life when this thought is going to be important to you, and I would love to know that it's somewhere memorized in the back of your mind. So, and this is a tiny poem, and the two tiny portions of it, I wrote the first when I was in the middle of the most awful, difficult stuff. And then
mm-hmm.
2 years later, I added the last two lines when I saw that I was going to survive. But this is called A Drama in Two Acts. I dim, I have no doubt if someone blew, I would go out. I did not. I must be brighter than I thought. And of course, I would assure all of the women who are listening here and the men too that in this darkest time that you may ever have experienced, well, in the cliche of the day, it gets better.
Uh-huh.
But in the poetic sense, you are brighter than you think you are right now. And
not only brighter, but, you know, when I first read your poem, when I first got your book and I read that and memorized it for myself, it was very encouraging and inspiring that no matter how bad things get, they will get better. And that's how I felt, you know, in my moments of, you know, when I was dimming, and there were
yeah.
plenty of those moments, at least I knew that, you know, I can shine bright again. It may not happen that day or that week, but it will be happening in the future. And I love that
right.
poem.
Good. And here's a little poem. A lot of people have told me this has been helpful to them. And I suggested a few minutes ago that it does help me to, and if it's not true, to at least make up the story. That what if I agreed to do this as part of my journey for myself and for a lot of other people too? So this little verse is called Trial Number 5. Carefully they laid out on the table trials 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Choose one, they said. Oh, any, she cried with a horror born of the best of Halloweens. Any but number 5. It would kill me. I promised her I would not survive. They thanked her graciously, escorted her out, then gift-wrapped, addressed, and labeled special delivery, trial number 5, sent with love from those whose assignment it is to make sure you know that you can go through trials 1, 2, 3, 4, 99, or 5, and incredibly come out alive. Now, if I were writing that now, I would like to add another rhyme that would say, and thrive.
Yes, I was going to say that's an excellent line to add.
Yeah.
And it's true because, you know what, after you survive, you can move to the next step of thrive.
Absolutely.
I think that, you know, I call it GHR, Gay Husband Recovery.
Right.
And you know, it's a process for women who are going through this because, you know, it's not like other marriages which are ending. There's so many other issues that are involved with this and so many complicated issues as well, especially when you have children and you can't just walk away and say goodbye.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell women, I wish, you know, I could click my red heels and put you forward a year, you know, when you're going through all this immediate pain and show you that life can get better and will get better if you allow it to get better. And there's no quick fix here. Did you find that also?
Pardon me? What was that
last? Did you find there was no quick fix to, this whole thing?
Oh, absolutely not. No, it's just a matter of going through one day at a time. And then you find here and there and here and there that, oh, here's a new interest. Here's some new strength. Here's a new bit of light coming through. And I always had good friends. And, you know, my Mormon community always supported me.
Uh-huh.
And it's, And I just opened the page to a little poem that shows that maybe even looking back, we can be grateful for some of the... this is called The Days We Shared. They were generating days, the days we shared, bright as when two fires combine. I leave wearing some of your light as you leave wearing some of mine.
And that's so true. You know, you take away things. They're all not negative things.
Yeah. No, you have to decide... And sometimes, in the worst of my time, I think maybe 5-3% of my time, I think the world is madness, and if there is a God, he's a madman. But
That's pretty much where I am too. But I'm like you. I really do believe in the goodness of people.
But you can't
live of everything. I just believe that believe in love, and I believe in the kindness of people. I see kind acts every day, and I also see monstrous acts. But I don't believe that's the majority of people are.
And when I'm in my right mind, I believe that we can look at everything that comes to us either as something that is for our benefit or something that we can turn into some kind of a benefit. And I just across the page from the one that I just got off the phone with my sister who didn't have anything like my experience, but she too experienced a divorce. And I wrote this little piece for her a long time ago. Split. You felt safe, I know, in that little space laced with love. Your cocoon, you called it. Warm, warm. I cried with you when it split. Oh, safe cannot compare with sky. I like you so much better as a butterfly.
Aww. That's beautiful. Are you writing new poetry?
No, I'm not.
I mean, your words are always so beautiful. They're like pearls.
Well, I don't know. It was a strange thing that I was able to get these poetry books published, and they're still widely used, but you know, I couldn't repeat the same success today in poetry. I just couldn't. I don't know. It's just
gone. Hard.
Okay, here's one I want your women to listen to, and your men, I guess. But I wrote this for women.
Mm-hmm.
This is called Support Group, and I'm sure that the women that have come to be friends among your listeners, whether they even have ever met each other or not, feel this sisterhood.
Yes, they do.
You can fall here. We are a quilt set to catch you. A quilt of women's hands threaded by pain made useful. With generations of comfort making behind us, we offer this gift. Warm as grandma's feather bed. Sweet as the heavenly mother's lullaby song. You can fall here. Women's hands are strong.
And that's so true. I always feel that with women, we overcome things that men could never overcome. I mean, many of our women are now thrust into the role of single parenthood.
Yeah.
You know, never expecting that would be the case. I mean, there's just so many kinds of strength that women have to find inner strength in order to carry on. And I know a lot of our women really, support is the most important thing, you know, which is
right.
why I love our support chats that we have a few times a week.
Yeah,
because
that's
people
great.
Just need
that
to have
great.
Somebody to reach out to. I think support's really the name of the game, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Right. And I
even
just,
for validation, I mean, you know, if you feel like you're alone and that you're crazy because your husband won't be honest with you, at least hearing it from other women, you feel validated.
Absolutely. That's essential.
Mm-hmm.
I just opened to another little poem that
okay,
I wanted
good.
Let me leave you with this, perhaps. It's called Power. When she learned that she didn't have to plug into someone or something like a toaster into a wall. When she learned that she was a windmill and had only to raise her arms to catch the universal whisper and turn, 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 she moved. Oh, she moved, and her dance was a marvel.
And that's so visual. I mean, you can actually see this happening.
Yeah.
And that's why the words you write are just so beautiful. You can actually see the action with them happening.
Yeah.
Now, people can still buy your poetry books?
Oh, yes. On my website, there's a page there, a shopping cart for all of my things that are available.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few books that are there. The poems are available now in a compilation called Beginnings and Beyond. And you can get autographed copies of that book at my website. And also autographed copies of Goodbye, I Love You, and No More Goodbyes, and Facing East. And some of my little inspirational books, like I have a little book called The Lesson that looks at life as a series of story problems that have been terribly useful to a lot of people. So, yeah, I'd encourage you women just to drop by there and browse around and see what I've been coming up with.
Yeah, no, like I said, I did send out the notice, you know, for all of our members in our newsletter, but we do have other women who will start listening who may not get that. So they will listen to this broadcast because this will go on forever, so people keep tuning in. But anyway, I want to give the address of your website. It's C like in Carol, L like in Lynn, Pearson, Pearson.com.
Right.
And when you go on Carolyn's site, you'll see her beautiful picture, her beautiful site, of course, with the caterpillar who becomes a butterfly. But also you can read about her and see her books and her photos. And it's just an amazing site, you know, to spend some time on and to see all the beautiful work this beautiful woman has done. And if you have any questions or you're having any problems accessing it, just, you know, give me a call. I mean, drop me a note at bonk@aol.com. And I also see that you do telephone consultations as far as helping people in counseling so that
yes.
you are, you know, someone who you can turn to as in a counseling role. And also you have so many other things on here. And I'm telling everyone, that book really, do you think that that's, you know, Goodbye, I Love You is really a timely book that will never lose its effect? It's
I think
a beautiful
so.
Love
story. I really do. It's clearly a dated piece in that our society is different now than it was in the 60s when we married, and then in the 80s when there was the terrible, terrible ignorance around the AIDS epidemic. But all of the issues of relationships are still the same. And so I have people all the time contacting me, telling me that book has been tremendously useful for them now.
Yes, and that's why I say if you haven't seen this book or read it, I strongly, you know, really recommend people to buy that particular book, Goodbye, I Love You. Because I just know how moved I was with it. You know, when you're coming out of a marriage and you're going through so much emotional turmoil, to be able to make that connection like Carolyn happened to make. And, you know, to see her poetry on this website is beautiful. You know, I think just what you do is just so amazing. I'm really in such awe of you. So,
I appreciate
before I let
that,
you go,
Bonnie. And,
I can get a commitment,
I'm back
in a few months.
Yeah, I'm very impressed.
There's so much more to say and so many more words of yours to listen to. And you're just such an inspiration. I know many people will be appreciative that, you know, you took this time to do it.
Thanks so much. I appreciate that. And I'm deeply impressed at the work that you're doing with so many people. That's an awesome gift to give
to
many who need it.
I always thank my ex-husband for giving me the opportunity.
Thanks for the pain. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We celebrated, actually, last week, our 34th anniversary.
Wow.
He was in town this week, and he took me out to dinner and bought me a present, which I insist on. But,
yeah.
You know, we haven't been married for many years. But I still feel he's obligated because, you know, I was the best thing that ever happened to him. And in some way, he was really the best thing that ever happened to me. But as much as I'm able to help so many women through whatever happened, the important thing is that if you can maintain a good relationship, you know. I just wanted to bring up one short story, if you don't mind, before you hang up.
Sure.
About those times in the 1980s. And this happened shortly after, you know, the Oprah Winfrey Show. I knew my kids were getting a little bit older, and I was going to be limited on doing television because I'm recognizable. You know, I'm short and I'm heavy, so people can see me. It's not like, you know, you just remain anonymous. And I did the Sally Jesse Raphael Show before it was like prime time. It was like 4 in the morning here in Philadelphia. And my son was only in nursery school at that time. I guess it was around 1986 or 7. And, right after the Oprah Show, I got a call from the Sally Jesse Raphael Show. And, you know, I went there because I figured, okay, people, you know, I'll keep it kind of low down there. But believe it or not, my son was born with a very rare illness, which, you know, several years ago he passed away from. But he was in the hospital back then, and after I went on that show, one woman saw the show at 4 in the morning, and because my son had been in the hospital, she put two and two together. Oh, his father is gay. He must have AIDS. And that she put this all together in her own head and started a petition at the nursery school where he was going, having every parent sign it that if my son wasn't removed from that school,
they
were going to take their kids out.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was just so traumatizing for me to see. That's why I say those were very dark times of people's ignorance.
They were, indeed they were.
And, you know, how scared people were when there was no relationship whatsoever to that.
Yeah.
But people were just so panicky. So that's why I remember those times only too well. And, you know, my heart really goes out to you for giving me, you know, for your pain. And also, one last thing we have in common before we hang up. Your birthday is one day after mine, so happy birthday.
Hey, happy birthday to you. So we're both Libras.
Mine's 26 and yours the 27th.
Yeah,
so.
And let me tell you, being a Libra is one of the main reasons I've been able to manage my life. Because I go through life like with my hands out like the scales, saying on the one hand there's this, on the other hand there's that. That's
you and me both always have to have that equal scale. You know, it's a pain in the neck, but I guess it makes us who we are.
It's been a useful thing for me, except when I'm trying to organize a room and I pick up something and look at it for 5 minutes and say, I should throw this away. No, I should do this. No, I should do that with it. That part of being a Libra is not
it's
not
a tough part about being a Libra, but I think it makes us who we are. So I think we'll keep it, right? Well, Carolyn, thank you so much.
Thank you, Carolyn.
You've been so kind and quiet there.
And will you send me the link to this that I can put it online?
Absolutely, and I'll send you the newsletter, too, from today.
Well, sending love to all the listeners and, you know, to all of you. You are brighter than sometimes you think in your darkest times. So
yes,
you're part of doing something important, and I honor you for that.
Thank you so much, and I hope you'll honor us and be a guest again this upcoming year.
That would be good.
All right, thank you
so much. Okay, many blessings to you.
All right, take care and have a good night.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Misty?
Yes.
Wasn't she a wonderful guest?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to talk about it a little bit because I think Carolyn is like a breath of fresh air in a religious world that swims uphill when she's trying to go downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you've seen a lot of this in your life as far as the Christian world. Have you dealt much with Mormonism, though?
I haven't. I have not. I, they they seem to deal with themselves, and I'm just delighted to hear how progressive it sounds like they have made strides in what she has said. And you know, from and I don't know a whole lot about it. What I do know is I think that they do work a lot with themselves. You know, Mormons work a lot with Mormons. That's what I know about it. And, and you know, some, of course, choose not to work with Mormons. But I've worked with very, very, very few. So,
you know, I'm just really surprised as I read Carol's website. And she has Carol's website. She also has a newsletter that you can subscribe to. Or if you want to write me a note at bondk@aol.com. I'll be happy to send you the link to her website. But I'm really, like I say, kind of surprised because I always thought of Mormons as being pretty fundamental in their beliefs with homosexuality. And we have somebody running for president who kind of confirms that, correct? Like, they don't seem like a very liberal type of group as far as their beliefs on this. And, yeah, on Carol's newsletter, you know, she sends me a lot of links, you know, to... and all the links for, you know, these sites where you have that wonderful video called It Gets Better, Straight Spouses. And here's a group of people from the Mormon church that are talking about how upset they were, how horrible they felt when they were married to their gay spouse because they didn't know what was wrong, and how much better life is now that they're not married, but they can remain friends. So I think, like, this is such progress, you know, from the Mormons. I mean, I'm just amazed that this is now, you know, going on. And, you know, it's accepted at least in some parts of the community.
So
Carolyn really is a pioneer. And I think that, you know, she's done amazing work over the years as far as writing, producing, doing her poems and her poetry. So I'm impressed. How about you?
Very, very. I mean, she's really, she's a mover and a shaker. I mean, she's done a lot of work, you can tell. And it's a benefit for straight wives. It's a benefit for gays and lesbians, and especially in the Mormon world. It's, and you know, and just in the Christian world in general. I mean, you know, she's done a lot of work, a lot of work.
And, you know, I just want to make sure people also know that if you're not receiving my newsletter and you would like to get a copy of it where you can hear about other upcoming shows and read a little more about Carolyn, please feel free to write to me at bondk@aol.com. That's bondkaye@aol.com. And I just want to remind people also that time's getting really close for my weekend, healing weekend on the 29th and 30th of September. We still have one or two spots if you're interested in joining me and a very dynamic group of women who are getting together to heal and to always keep looking to move forward. So that's the last weekend in September here in Philadelphia. If you need more details about that, please feel free to contact me. Next week, we have a really great guest coming back, Misty.
And who would that be?
You have to guess who it is.
We've had so many. Wow.
Am I putting you on this? Am I putting you on the spot by making you guess?
On the spot. We've had some great guests. We really have.
I'm sorry. I'll change that around. We're going to have Suzette Hinton on next week.
Okay. Thank you.
And Suzette is really one of our really encouraging women who works with minority women and, you know, specializes in working with minority women. And Suzette is now doing coaching. And she's doing a lot of other things right now, and she's doing a lot of writing. And she's been a guest before, and I think she always inspires us with her story about her marriage and remarriage. And so people don't feel quite so stupid, as they keep telling us, you know, I feel stupid because I went back or I believed him. You know, we're all human, and we all, you know, try to want to believe the best in every relationship, and that's why it's so difficult. And I think you would say that too, Misty. You keep trying, right? Trying
absolutely
to make something work.
It took me, you know, I knew the marriage was there was something wrong. I stayed in my marriage for over 10 years. And, you know, I knew it wasn't right. We're only human. And, you know, I learned from that. There was great lessons to learn from that marriage. And I learned from it. I moved on. It took me, you know, that long to emotionally divorce and to move on, not just a physical divorce through the legal system, but it takes time, and we do. You know, we have intentions, and we try, and sometimes we have to pick ourselves up and go back and try again. We're not perfect, you know. We absolutely are not perfect. We, you know, I think we're so critical of ourselves sometimes, and sometimes I forget how difficult those days were and those days when I did leave. So, you know, it's not easy. It's not an easy process, as you know, Brian. It's not easy at all. You know, we do. We may fail one day, but you know what? We may have success the next day. So we're human.
And, you know, there's some issues that in the future that we'll be bringing up, and someone wrote to me today who, I won't mention her name, but, you know, somebody who you and I both know, wonderful woman, and she was saying, you know, we have so much out there and so much support for women once they know that their husbands are gay, but look how many women go through life and never get a confession, or they're confused because their husbands go out and they remarry again, and they're never going to have confirmation. You know, how do they get support? And I'm not quite sure. You know, I think support is support. And, you know, maybe just by meeting others who go through this, you know, you'll find more supported, or you'll feel more supported. And I know it is a problem that when you have this hanging over your head and you can't get a confession, it says, I've been reading your monthly newsletters, most of the time focused on married spouses that came out of the closet. All the suggestive books you mentioned seem to wrap only around the scenario. The How to Survive After the Gay Admission is wonderful for those who need same. But what about those of us who have to deal with the aftermath of a closeted gay spouse, ex-spouse? And says we do not get that same sense of relief as those as the spouse comes out. And that's so true. I mean, I agree. You know, having validation makes it all worthwhile. But once again, I say that you really don't need to have a confession, or you don't have to have black and white. You just have to know that you're not happy and in a normal marriage and you want to get out of it. Wouldn't you say so, Miss Thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you really have to go on your gut, your intuition, and learn to trust that, believe that, because that does become your proof. And it also becomes, you know, is your life happy? I mean, throw out the window, you know, what's going on, and, you know, is your life happy? Bottom line, is your life headed in the direction that you wish for it to be?
Right. I tell women, you don't have to spend your whole life being a detective and looking for proof of something that you may never get proof of. You know, just know that you're not happy, and that's proof enough. Mm-hmm. Know that your husband doesn't want to touch you, and that's proof enough. You know, like some women were saying, you know, we're in chat early, and some were saying, well, you know, my husband feels repulsed if I want to kiss him, or he doesn't want me to touch him, or he doesn't want to touch me. Okay, so let's say they don't want to have sex, you know, and they call you a nymphomaniac and all that. That has nothing to do with the intimacy that they're not holding you or stroking your hair or your head or, you know, telling you they love you. There's none of that involved. I mean, you know, even if you can't have sex or you can't be intimate for whatever reason, you can still, you know, be loving and kind to the person who's married to you. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's just, you know, is your marriage, are you growing together as a couple? I mean, what direction is it going in? Do you feel like it's an authentic relationship, or do you both feel like you're living authentically? And, you know, that's just the key to, I think, living a beautiful life. And if you wish to have a beautiful and happy life, what direction are you going in? And, you know, how much more proof do you need? Because when you get some proof, you know, sometimes you'll trick yourself into saying, well, I just need a little more proof. Well, I just need a little more proof than that. You know, you can really fall, you know, pull yourself into a trap.
Yeah, and especially when you confront your husband and he tells you that you're crazy, you don't know what you're talking about, you're making up stories, you're reading into things, and that's what I call the gaslighting, you know, when they make the, well, for me it's the gay lighting. But it's like the, you know, the movie Gaslight, when you keep making your spouse think that she's crazy so that, you know, your truth will be hidden. And it's just a shame that so many men have to be doing this to women. You know, I tell these men, man up to this, face the music, you know, tell your wife the truth. The least she deserves is hearing the truth from you. And if she doesn't like it and she starts screaming and yelling, she'll scream and yell, but at least she'll know the truth. The longer you withhold that truth, the more you're hurting her. And I'll still never understand how men who claim that they love their wives and they want to keep them happy, but they still have to sit and lie about this. I don't get it. Do you?
I don't either. I mean, I don't think it's healthy for either party in the relationship. And it's just not, to me, it's just not an authentic, happy life. I mean, to me, I choose to live a truthful life, a life with happiness and, you know, and growth. So when I have to, if I were to have to cover things up, it just would not be heading in the direction I want it to be.
Yep, and that's what I tell women. You know, if it's not working for you, you don't need any other proof than that. Get yourself out. So anyway, Misty, we're going to end our show now, and it's been a long week. How about for you?
I'm sorry, I couldn't.
Did you move yet?
No, not yet.
You're still in the hills of Kentucky?
Absolutely. Enjoying this nice fall weather. My favorite time of the year.
Yep. And enjoying the person who you're spending it with, right?
As always.
Thank goodness for that. All right,
absolutely.
Misty, well, you know I love you. And all our listeners, thanks for listening to us. We're there for you. Never hesitate to write for support or listen to our past previous podcasts. Otherwise, we'll be back with Suzette next week, and I know that you're going to love her show. All right, have a wonderful night to everybody and a wonderful week, and Misty, I'll let you sign off.
Good night and love to all.
Bye-bye.
Bye.